welcome in the Tuesday Hacks. Courtney Welsh, hello to you.
Yeah, good morning, Gareth. Good morning, Ralphie. What a week it is ahead of us.
Yes, grand final week. Can't wait for it. And thanks to the Ascot Vale Hotel and the Herald Sun, Johnny Ralph joins us. Good morning, Johnny.
Hello, Gareth. Some days you're the rooster, some days you're the feather duster. So Harry Kewell sacked in the last 48 hours of the fifth-tier non-league English club Barnet, 7 games into the season. I think right now he's the feather duster. I think Walshy and I are probably closer to the feather duster than the rooster that you are. But, yeah, whatever is happening in your life, you could be Harry Kewell right now getting sacked. So, yeah, good luck to him. He's not quite coaching Man U, but you never know. He's only 42 years of age.
He hasn't quite made it on the coaching scene, has he really, poor old Harry?
No, he hasn't. And you know what? I mean, you only have to look at Ange Postecoglou and, you know, someone who was, sacked himself many times as an A-League coach and probably thought that, or even in, you know, the old NSL, probably thought he'd never get there, you know. He wasn't sacked, but he was certainly, you know, stepped down as the Australian coach, and all of a sudden he's coaching Celtic on the world stage. And so, yeah, I mean, they're famously ruthless, those English clubs. So maybe 7 weeks is quite a long time to be in the job, given, you know, the Harry Redknapps of the world get sacked in even quicker time than that.
And just quickly, Johnny, before we go to Walsh, we've got Monday Night Football in the States, and Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are taking on the Detroit Lions at 7-all at the moment. Can the Lions cause an upset? Because the Packers are an unhappy football organisation at the moment, Johnny. They're a little bit like, you know, I wouldn't say they're like you and Aaron Rodgers and the Herald Sun at the moment, but they're just, you know, they're at loggerheads.
They are at loggerheads, yeah. Yeah, when you go and, you know, use your first round draft pick to go and to secure your replacement rather than another.
I think we just lost Ralphie there. There we go. You back, Ralphie? No, we've lost Ralphie there. Well, we're just talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Great Bay Packers. I don't know. He's just disappeared, Ralphie. But it's an interesting storyline there. One of the biggest names in the sport there in the NFL.
And certainly in the infancy of the season as well. You know, a town that is accustomed to great success, to being a heavyweight despite its size on the Great Lakes. Fascinating to see what unfolds in the next sort of 4 months, I think.
I wish we had this Zoom call recorded, because just the facial expressions on Johnny Ralph there after he realised that he'd been talking for the last couple of minutes to nobody. Welcome back.
I'm back. That was fine. I talk to myself all the time. You know, no one likes the sound of their own voice more than me. So, yeah, Green Bay. Green Bay will bounce back. Detroit's the worst franchise in all sport. I've been a long time Detroit fan. I've been to their stadium. It's a lovely stadium. They just don't tend to win there very often. So, even though Green Bay's in a bit of strife right now with Aaron Rodgers and co, don't worry about that. Detroit will be leading by 7 points in the last minute, and then there'll be some ghoulish way in which they'll lose an onside kick, and they'll lose in freakish circumstances, because that's what Detroit does.
So should we get on at the $5 at the moment in live betting with the tab? Is that too big of a price for your side, Detroit?
I think any money you spend on Detroit is wasted money. Okay. You know, something like 26 years since we've won a finals game. We played against Dallas about 6 years ago. We're up, you know, late in that contest. You know, refereeing decisions, freakish penalties. We lost. So, no. If you wanted to just throw money down the drain, that would be a better use than getting on Detroit.
0416, well, I'm used to that. 0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation here on RSN Central's Tuesday Hacks. As always on a Tuesday, we go through our heroes, our hoaxes, and our headline of the week. And my hero is Travis Boak. I love Travis Boak. I thought he was a wonderful recipient of the Jim Steins Award there on Brownlow night, there on Sunday night. He spoke so well. And he is a man that I think is just a wonderful ambassador for the game of footy. And as he pointed out, it is sometimes about premiership medals, and that's what they do play for. But he is an athlete that's making a difference in the community. He is using his status in the game to make the world a better place. So I say well done to Travis Boak. He is my hero for this week. What about you, Walshy?
I will say just a second that I love that Jim Steins Award. Very good to see the community aspect of the game and what football has put into the sport and the community recognised. Look, my hero, I'm going to go heroes, Gareth, broader.
Yes.
It takes a broad church to build success. Obviously, we'll be looking at Max Gawn and Marcus Bontempelli and Petrarca and Tommy McDonald and co on Saturday. But the teams behind the team on the field, you know, the presidents, Kate Roffey, Collie Watson-Wheeler, Gary Pert and Amit Baines, the chief executives, obviously Goodwin and Beveridge. Just, it takes a massive work. Grand final appearances don't come via good luck. They take a lot of work to get things right. So I think broader congratulations to everyone involved in this grand final coming up on Saturday night.
Just on that, with the Melbourne Football Club's board and behind the scenes there, the top office there at the Melbourne Football Club, Glenn Bartlett's a fascinating story for mine this week, and we haven't heard from him, I don't think, but he is a WA man. He was the former president. He was basically would have been still the president until Johnny Ralph wrote that story and fixed him right up and threw him under the bus, and he lost his presidency after that story, basically. But do you feel for him, Ralphie, in a way? Because he was strong that day talking about Simon Goodwood, and he held the club accountable in a way. And now they've had the success that they've had, but he did a lot of good work, I think, anyway, in his tenure at the top there at the Melbourne Football Club.
No doubt he did. And look, he's still on the Melbourne board. And, you know, I think he strongly contests the version that he was booted out. You know, as he said, that I was elected unanimously for another 12 months. And, you know, some circumstances changed. And, you know, maybe there were some board members who were lobbying for his departure. But as he said, he could have remained in the top job and decided to move aside for the stability of the football club. Now, this is a club that, you know, was in significant debt. I mean, this is a club that had got fined for tanking only a couple of years before he and Peter Jackson came on board. You know, he was able to secure Peter with the AFL's help. He was able to get him to sign on long term. I think the only thing that that Glenn is really upset about is the narrative that he forced the coach out. As he said, all of the things I was talking about there were the value in the jumper. You know, you don't give Melbourne jumpers out in a Wheaties packet. You need to respect it. And I think Glenn feels like, yeah, he gave nothing but support to Simon Goodwin after that. That, you know, I think he's really upset with the narrative that, yeah, that he was ever wanting to remove him from his job. And certainly, you know, when the review happened post-season through Gary Pert, the club decided that, you know, that absolutely the only decision they could make was to keep him on. Yeah, they needed to change some things. Yeah, they were a better side than, well, they should have been a better side than what they were. So it's good to see Glenn over there. And I had a chat to him today, this week. He certainly will be at that grand final. Hey, just quickly too on the Brownlow stuff, you know, I think we're hypocrites if we keep saying the umpires need to make better decisions and to reward more key to position defenders and forwards. I think, you know, the media does it, every award does it, the AFL Coaches Association does it. So I think the only way, Gareth, to actually recognise these defenders is to coin a new medal. I just think about someone who just was synonymous with that, you know, Danny Frawley. I just think it's a perfect opportunity for the AFL to call it the Danny Frawley medal, call it the Danny Frawley golden fist, you know, because he would have loved that kind of thing. I know he has it on bounce, but I just keep thinking to myself, it's so important for us to actually recognise the Tom Stewarts of the world or the Jake Leavers or whatever it might be. And we can't bleat about, oh, let's just make the Brownlow, a more equitable award. It's never going to be. Let's just coin another award that actually recognises those guys.
Doesn't the All-Australian team recognise defenders?
Does, but it also recognises midfielders and forwards. You know, I just think that they're important enough that, you know, we've got the Coleman medal, we've got the midfielders medal, which is the Brownlow medal. And I think there's another way to actually recognise them, while also recognising, you know, what Danny was able to do. You know, someone who, you know...
But that was a piss take for most of the time.
Yeah, but you know what? It's hard. As with most things with Danny, there was a serious level to it as well. Yep. The blokes out there who absolutely were prepared to put themselves on the line. You know, you talk to Nathan Burke or Stewie Lowe or any of those blokes. You know, he had those defensive attributes at his heart. And so, yeah, I think Danny would love that. He'd see a bit of humour in it. You know, that's something that turned that was a piss take, become something that was really serious.
Your hero, Ralphie, before we go to a break.
My hero is Michael Voss. So down to the last two, you know, very strongly.
Tony Sheehan's declared it. He's called it, hasn't he, T. Sheehan, your colleague there at the Herald Sun?
Yes, so I think Tony feels like he's signed a 4-year contract, and even that the board yesterday might have approved it.
Covered role.
I don't know that that's exactly the case. I just checked in again with Carlton half an hour ago. They said. I think what happens, what needs to happen, is that I think. That Brian Cook really wants to meet or at least have an interview with Michael Voss. I think Voss is very much, he's in the last two, he's their preferred candidate. I think something absolutely dramatic would have to go wrong, you know, as we speak. But I just love the fact that instead of just, you know, giving them the middle finger, a salute to Carlton after being knocked back 2 years ago in what was, you know, basically a boat race, he said, no, this is probably my last best chance to actually become a senior coach. And he rolled up his sleeves and he swallowed his pride. And now I think he'll be the Carlton football coach.
Had a good chat with Voss earlier this year, Ralphie and Gareth, in relation to the work that he does with returned servicemen leading into Anzac Day. He's sort of like a guest speaker. He had a real interest in trying to help people outside of football as well. You know, and he traces it back to a course he did at Harvard quite a few years ago when they visited the States, he and a couple of others. And he said that helped him build, like, you know, increase his empathy, increase his ability to communicate, to look and have a broader perspective. And I think that if he is to get the top job, he will do an excellent, make an excellent second fist of his coaching career.
Just quickly on Michael Voss, why has he failed at previous attempts to get the top job at a football club once again, Ralphie? Because he has been knocking on the door for a few years now.
He hasn't interviewed well, Gareth. You know, I think we can gild the lily, and you know, but I think there's been some interviews where people have just said he just doesn't seem to, all the things that he's good at don't seem to come across, you know, when he is in these interviews. I don't know if they're PowerPoint presentations, I don't know if they're psychological assessments, whatever it might be. But some people have come out and said, oh, they feel like he's mediocre. And so, you know, he's good mates. And certainly, you know, the people at Port Adelaide who know him well are just so distraught by that, because they say, you know, talk to the players, talk to the staff, talk to the people that he coaches, talk to the people that he's around. He's a superstar and he has got empathy and he has got great communication skills. And so, look, I'm not sure whether there was something different in his Carlton presentation, but I think what clubs are doing better now, he's not just judging it off a presentation, talking to all the people around him, all the referees, and I think that's how Craig McRae got the Collingwood job, and I think that's how Vossie will get the Carlton job.
We'll take a quick break. This is RSN Central with Gareth Hall. You've got Courtney Walsh and Johnny Ralph on the other side of it. We'll go through our hoaxes and headlines on this Tuesday. Tuesday Hacks, Gareth Hall, Johnny Ralph and Courtney Walsh with you. My hoax is Carlton's cooking. He's the answer to all of their problems. Brian Cook. I don't know if he is going to be the saviour, however, Ralphie. I don't think one man can turn a football club like that around. I think it's everybody's involvement, especially from the top there with the board, that they change their philosophy on how they've been able to run that club for so long, in a way.
I think if Brian just came in and all the same rules applied, I think he'd bang his head against the wall. But they have changed their board. You know, the Jeannie Pratts of the world, who, you know, probably felt, you know, because they had so much money, they had power at that football club, have been able to move off. I think it's four of the eight board members. They got a new president, you know, so clearly he's gonna have to work to keep him in check, to keep his ego in check, to tell him how, you know, great presidents are at football clubs, the likes of Frank Costa and Colin Carter as well. And the fact that he's got a new coach in, you know, almost certainly Michael Voss, I think that's going to help as well. The only way you actually win a premiership is not by making a great decision bot like Brian Cook. It's making great decisions over and over and over again, you know, backing in the list management, you know, backing in the coaching team and getting the right people there. And, you know, I think the great thing about the exodus of Carlton in terms of their assistant coaches is Vossie will be able to bring in, if it's Matty Scarlett or Nigel Lappin or whoever it might be. You know, there is often tension there where you've got a couple of contracted coaches who stay there when the new coach comes in. He gets his team, he gets a CEO that will believe in him because he'll have the mandate having selected him. I think it's the biggest appointment at Carlton in the last 25 years, given what he has the capacity to set up.
0416 90 50 52 to join our conversation. We might hear from Alistair Clarkson on AFL 360 last night explaining once again why he didn't want to coach Carlton this year.
I spoke to Cookie over the weekend and I appreciated the call and enormously respectful of the process that they're going through, but I'm sticking to what I said, you know, 6 or 8 weeks ago, that I need a spell. I've only got 2 years. That's flat out or stop. I'm just not ready to go flat out again right now. I couldn't respect two clubs greater than Collingwood and Carlton in terms of and the lure to coach those clubs is just like is right sitting there right in front of your face. Do you want to put your hand up to see whether you'd be selected to coach those sides? But it wasn't strong enough to overpower my thinking in terms of what my family and I need right now, and that's 12-month spell. Now, in that 12 months, I'm quite serious when I've said this throughout the course of the year, I might find out that I can't recharge the batteries and I don't want to go again, or I think probably it's in my DNA to want to coach again at the end of next year or the year after. I don't want to backflip again.
So there'll be a few nervous coaches, I would imagine, with top jobs at the moment going into next year. And one of those, well, she would be Stuart Dew. He probably wakes up with a shadow of Alistair Clarkson over him each and every morning from now on.
Well, he certainly helped him claim that famous premiership back in 2008, Stuart Dew. He would want to be playing finals, I think, next year, Gareth, and you know, for the first time in the Suns' history, I think that's crucial. Otherwise, clearly, a man of Clarkson's calibre with his reputation and resume. And the other thing is, he will have a year to assess and see what's going on and to see whether he can come up with another brilliant plan to take whoever he coaches next forward towards premierships. It's hard necessarily to keep up with strategy while you're coaching week to week to week to week. And he's been doing it now for, you know, the best part of 20 years. To have a little time to actually study and reflect even more can only be good things for him.
Ralphie, what about your hoax for today?
Well, just quickly on Clarko, yeah. I wonder whether he might be the first coach of the Tasmanian Football Club. Now, he may well go and coach Gold Coast or another club for 4 or 5 years, but, you know, I just think it was such a big story that he's prepared to roll up his sleeves and be, call it an ambassador, call it a lobbyist, you know, part of that task force that will have a decision by the AFL by about August. Yeah, I can't think of anyone better for a significant challenge than to coach Tasmania. Now, if it is that the AFL, you know, ticks it off through the president's next August, you probably think it's a 4 or 5 year lead in time. So again, you know, he's not stepping out of coaching for that long. But his capacity to give back to the game, I think we'll see him land at an expansion club. It's just whether it's at Gold Coast, you know, next year or the year after, or whether it's Tasmania as well. My headline: Craig Bellamy first, daylight second. You know, I think one of the real sadnesses of this year is, for whatever reason, because potentially the Storm are out of sight and out of mind, you know, because they're not on free-to-air as much as they could be, I think we've missed what's been one of the great coaching seasons from Craig Bellamy. You know, they lost Cooper Cronk, they lost they lost Cam Smith, they lost Billy Slater. You know, they just keep dominating, they keep winning flags. You know, even when Pappenhausen was out long-term, you know, they're a budding young star, they just keep winning. For them to win again this year, you know, call it a dynasty, whatever you might be. I mean, Craig Bellamy, he's got old school tactics. He hasn't even got an email. I think he's got a mobile phone, but he's truly one of the great coaches of the modern era in any sport across all of Australia.
When you think about Belichick and say Tom Brady, everybody was trying to work out, is it the Belichick factor or is it the Tom Brady factor? In that particular war, in a way, Brady won it because he went to the Buccaneers and tasted success at Super Bowl level once again. But you make that really good point with Bellamy. He's lost the legends of the game. Sometimes, or some people say that a player like a Cameron Smith is the greatest of all time, but he's still been able to turn over players and great players and be successful. He is the most, well, he's probably got, he's the most valuable stock in a way when it comes to Australian sport for mine.
I think, you know, Ange Postecoglou, of course, we talked about him over at Celtic there, you know, has found his way into the world stage. You know, Clarko and Dimmer, 7 premierships between them since, what, 2008. Dean Boxall is probably the most high profile on the world stage after his, you know, heroics with Ariana Titmus. But, you know, there are blokes who take one great side and drag it for all it's worth. He has been able to do it with multiple teams, you know, losing his stars. And the greatest testament to him is that when players come into his team from all the other NRL sides, they become better, they grow another leg. And, you know, that's going to be his legacy as well with all of those flags. For a franchise that, you know, lost so many of those flags, as they should have through salary cap, you know, they are a mighty, mighty franchise. And, yeah, he's clearly the best coach in Australia.
All right then, Ralph, for your hoax.
My hoax is the Bryson versus Brooks battle. They are playing Ryder Cup, thankfully not together, I don't believe. But, you know, I know it was a titillating thing for the PGA Tour, you know, with Brooks, you know, savaging Bryson, Bryson savaging him, you know, the taunting that now occurs every time that Bryson, you know, gets out onto a golf course there. You know, I think it was funny. I think it was a modern-day Twitter war. And all it is now, I think, is something that's shown, you know, Brooks to be, you know, let's call it what it is, you know, boorish, you know, happy to bully, you know, him on and off the course and in media interviews. Bryson clearly has massive flaws as a human being in regards to, you know, the glass jaw and all of the issues that he has. They're both exceptional, you know, golfers and major winners, but I just can't help thinking that, you know, in their bid to try and, you know, drag some more Twitter followers through the gate, I think both of them are diminished in terms of their public platforms.
And what was your headline and hoax on this Tuesday?
And I'm fascinated to see what you guys think about this, but Martin muscles up again in a grand final. And not Dustin Martin this time around, but Stephen Martin.
Clark Keith.
And the role that he has to play in this grand final for the Western Bulldogs. You know, you go back and have a look. He didn't play in either match against Max Gawn, who he mentored early on in his career at Melbourne before heading to Brisbane, where he became an outstanding ruckman, Stephen. Now at the Western Bulldogs, Max had 56 hitouts a few weeks back when the Bulldogs got up by, you know, by 20-odd points in round 19. Back in May, he only had 27 hitouts, and yet Melbourne was the dominant team. I think it's fascinating to see what will happen from the centre of the ground on Saturday night.
If Martin can level proceedings in a way with Gawn, Ralphie, I think the Doggies go a long way to winning this match on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think I love the fact that when these times teams were out last time, you know, a wintry old night there, the expected scores were absolutely neck and neck. And so for all the speculation about, you know, Melbourne's going to counter to a win, you just think of so often where, you know, call it 2008, you know, great upset there where Geelong, I think, it won 15 in a row. You know, call it, you know, all of the legendary grand finals there as recently as 2017. Adelaide, the overwhelming favourites. Richmond found a way to get it home. So I don't think the hitouts to advantage or the, you know, the ruck battles are going to be decisive in regards to the centre square. I just think it's whoever can charge forward, whoever can instill their physical pressure on the game. And I just think to myself, I wonder if it comes down to Max Gawn, 40 metres out, directly in front with a game on the line. You know, he did it against Geelong down at GMHBA. As he says, he so often hooks the ball left. We've loved his contributions on the Breakfast Club, you know, this year. But, yeah, I wonder whether the game might well be on Max Gawn's boot after all that he's done this season. Wouldn't that be an extraordinary finish?
Yes, it would be if Maxie Gawn can be the hero. And I would back him into kicking it straight once again. Tuesday Hacks, Gareth Hall, Johnny Ralph and Courtney Walsh. Walshy, what about your hoax?
Look, while we're celebrating, it's not so much a hoax, but while we're celebrating excellence at the elite level in various football codes this weekend, just a thought again for the community sport teams around the state, around New South Wales, you know, grand finals, etc., called off, you know, unable to be finished with seasons unable to be finished. And then you read about what's happening in cricket in terms of, you know, clubs struggling to get enough teams because of the uncertainty, players not showing up. You know, the costs don't go away when you're a club, but the participation has dipped significantly. So I do have a significant feeling for them. It's not so much a hoax, it's more a feeling of lament for them.
I know that Gillon McLachlan's been working around the clock to make sure he gets an AFL season completed this season, this year. But I think one of his biggest headaches going forward, Ralphie, and whilst you just pointed this out, is actually trying to get the participation numbers up once again, because talking to a few people and around the traps these days, there's a lot of teenagers that might have lost a little bit of interest in playing football these days, which is a concern not only for football but for most sports now.
Oh, I'm really scared about it. You know, I think once you get kids addicted to their screens, as we all know with our own, you know, screen use, it's just impossible to stop them. You know, I just think about my kids, they're in the playground there and after about 20 minutes they get bored now because they've just spent so much time on their screens because they've had to, because, you know, often their parents are working and doing their own thing as well. Or, you know, some of it too is just because that's what the demand has been for, you know, from their schooling as well. You know, that, you know, they're happy for their Saturday morning sleep-ins. They're happy to just, you know, go and play whatever Minecraft it might be. And once you get out of the routine of, you know, 2 years of junior sport or whatever it is, it's just hard to get them back into it. You know, I'm really scared. I know the AFL will throw money at it, but I don't quite know how you know, how that happens when a lot of parents will find their kids just don't want to play junior sport anymore.
Hi, guys. Ralphie's on the right track, but if you do a Defenders medal, it should be after either Fred Goldsmith or Bob Murray, as they won Brownlow's playing at fullback. I like that. That's from Doc there, Walshy.
No, that's absolutely spot on. Clearly decorated players, legends of their eras. Certainly makes sense to me.
Actually think Rats will be under the most pressure, closer to the farm at Mornington than most. Fitz family and personal life, talking about Alistair Clarkson, if he does take over from a football club or another coach there in 2023 now, Walshy.
It's a brutal business, football coaching, as we know. The finals last year, clearly a disappointing season for the Saints this year. They showed some signs, I thought, late in the year that they might be able to get it back together. If he can harness what we saw in 2020, you know, I think the Saints will be okay, Brett Ratton. But what we don't know is the impact of the last two seasons on every club. So we don't know how the clubs will bounce back when we get some sort of sense of normality next year. For the Saints and for Brett Ratton's hope, hopefully it works for them.
Well, Shea, I need your grand final prediction and also the Norm Smith medal.
Norm Smith medal, I think, Christian Petrarca.
Yep.
Melbourne.
All right, then Melbourne and Christian Petrarca. What about you, Ralphie?
Melbourne by 28 points for me. And look, I've thrown up Cozzy Pickett as the outsider in the Norm Smith. He's $51, but you know, I suppose knowing what we've known about, you know, Dusty Martin win three of the last four, seeing what we've seen with the Brownlow medal, the dominant midfielders, you know, win the day in a grand final and they win the Norm Smith. So that's not great value, but I just think if you had $5 on Cozzy, given that a couple of those small forwards have won over the last 15 years, I reckon you'll have a heck of a lot of fun across the afternoon.
Just quickly, Ralphie, before we let you go, what would be the biggest trade story next week after the grand final?
Well, I think if Adam Chera decided not to go to Carlton, I think that would rock their socks. Now, I don't see how Melbourne, you know, finds a deal for him, but even if they gave up their second round of this year, their first round of next year, you know, if someone could find a suitor there, you know, potentially a second round pick for Sam Wiedemann, you know, maybe that gets close to a package. So I think that would be extraordinary. And I think at Port Adelaide, the strong feeling now is that Jordan Dawson is more likely to choose Adelaide, given he's, you know, been offered a really lucrative contract there, and so that might not get the hearts of flutter in Melbourne. But yeah, we still haven't found that, you know, Tom Mitchell replacement. We still haven't found or a suitor for him. So we get the feeling it's going to be a really boring trade period, but there might just be someone out there with significant cash who might just cause a real splash in the next couple of weeks.
Good on you, Ralphie. Thanks for that. Good on you, Walshy. We'll catch up with you next week.
Absolute pleasure, gents.